Paranormal Truth and Reality with host Chris Houston. A show for those with a passion for the paranormal. And now, welcome to the show.
Welcome to Paranormal Truth and Reality. I'm your host, Christopher Houston.
So what you been up to?
Trying to write more. I've got three more books in the works. Been doing a lot of investigations. Trying to do a lot of fun things. We've done a few public investigations since we last talked. Fundraisers and freebies and things like that to get people in the area interested in some of the haunted locations. So it's been kind of fun. My team, once again, is doing great. A lot of good people, a lot of good work going on, and just love being with them.
Awesome. Well, I know investigation's a blast, but unfortunately, I've taken the past 3 or 4 months off, so I won't be doing my first investigation until mid-January, I think. But looking forward to it, actually. I'm going to get back out to Post Town, and I intend to do a convention at the end of January with a haunted town. And then we're out to Octagon and all over the place next year.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, well, and we're going to look you up before it's over with, too. So expect to hear me hit you up about a week or two before we get to California.
Sounds good.
Going to hopefully have you take me up to David Ullman's house, and I'll eat a steak with him and buy the steaks, and we'll hang out and see what the Ullman house decides to say to me.
Sounds good. Yeah, we'll just, it's easy to get up there, and I'm sure, and I know he's waiting for you, so that'll be good.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it for a while. I know I've been talking to you and him for, gosh, I don't know, it's been at least, what, 5 years now?
I believe so, yeah. Sounds like it.
Yeah, definitely. Well, listeners, just so that you know, I'll interrupt pretty early tonight. Now, this weekend, of course, what just passed this weekend is New Year's and the ringing of 2019. So congratulations to all of you into the new coming year, since we won't be running here on BBS that with the countdown. I will be doing a countdown on WCGT, obviously, so you can feel free to tune in there. We're going to do the 10-9-8 ball drop, obviously, and I'm wishing everybody a happy New Year's this year. I thought it would be a great thing to have Joe on because we haven't caught up in a while, and we can just kind of chat shop and have a little bit of a blast tonight. So,
sounds good to me.
So where have you investigated recently?
We've done a lot of private investigations, private residences, people calling in and saying they're having issues. Some of them have been very interesting. Of course, I can't give locations, but cities I can. But there have been a few of them, like one a month and a half ago. They built a house 15 years ago and trapped something inside of it, something old Native American possibly, trapped it inside the house, and it didn't know how to get out. Their son, it was in his room, and their son was having all sorts of anxiety issues. The family was fighting, arguing. They were about ready to get divorced, et cetera, et cetera. It was really, really bad. Went up there, led that thing out of the house, closed a portal, and crossed over a few spirits. And they're all back together again. The kids relaxing more. Husband and wife aren't getting divorced anymore. It was a good thing. Just did one a couple of weeks ago. Lady had an attachment. This was just north of Riverside, San Bernardino area. She had an attachment. Couldn't get rid of it. I don't know really what was going on with it. But we found a teenage boy that was in her house, spirit-wise, that was standing at the end of her bed every night wanting to tell her something. But, of course, it scared her, so she didn't know what it was, what was going on. Went up there a couple of times to try to help. And finally, I called Archbishop Cloud, got him video phone-wise, and we started walking around the house. Got in there. He was doing his minor rite of exorcism bit in the house itself. During that time, we saw a dark shadow leave from the lady and start running through the house. Archbishop Cloud kept going, and she went up to the bathroom and started vomiting for about 10 minutes or so. When she came out, she smiled for the first time I'd ever seen her smile. And so we went around, cleaned up the rest of the house, got it all completely empty. And she and everybody, the kids are sleeping in their rooms now. Again, she and her husband are doing just fine. And she's smiling again, which is really good. So it's, you know, these private residence things are really good. As for the public, we've done a few more investigations at the Corona Public Library in Corona, California. That's always interesting. There's about seven spirits in the place. And not because of the library itself, except for one spirit, but because of the property, things that have happened over the past 100, 150 years on the property itself. Suicides, lots of bad things going on. There was a homeless lady that stayed across the street in front of the 99 cent store. And a few years back, she was unfortunately stabbed a number of times by another homeless person. And she used to go into the library all the time and read the magazines, get warmed up if necessary, have some coffee. And she used to read all the magazines and things. Really a wonderful lady from what I hear. But she spends her time there in the middle floor of the library. And we could talk to her. You could talk to her. And some people can even see her sitting there. But there's like seven spirits in there, a little boy, a couple other people in. And it's kind of interesting. But the public loves going there on our adventures. We usually have two-hour sessions a night when we do this. And they get to use our equipment, walk around with investigators. I usually bring in Murphy Paranormal, whoever's available to help, because we have more people than my team can handle. We'll bring in Debbie Gwynn. We'll bring in a few other local investigators to help us run the event. And it turns out really good. Have a great time with it.
Well, it sounds like an interesting place. I haven't had the privilege of doing a library yet, though I hear they're amazing. There's two things that I've missed so far. One of them is an opera house or a theater house, and the other one is a library, which obviously any ghost hunter that's ever started from being a child has to go to a library before the end of their life. I mean, you watch Ghostbusters, so you got to at least go in there and know that you're not going to see the old lady going, shh.
Good point. Yeah, we do that library coming up this year. Our researcher, Kathy, has been giving us, trying to hook us up. January, she's going to start again. We'll probably be doing, hopefully, the Fox Theater in town. We'll be doing the Riverside Auditorium, I hope. A lot of these places, you know, the theater-type places are usually always haunted anyway. Uh-huh. But we'll be doing those places. And a few more she hasn't talked to me about. She's just saying, I'm working on them. So hopefully we can get some really good stuff going this year, probably later on this summer.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be pretty amazing for you, definitely. You mentioned a couple of things that I think are very important for listeners to understand. Residential investigations are totally different than commercial investigations. Commercial spots tend to react a little bit differently, where residential spots affect people, I guess you could say. And right. That's generally more likely when you're going to get attachments or what I like to call pests.
Yeah.
And also more likely to get the situation where you have to call in somebody that knows more about exorcism or how to deal with the more drastic natures, I guess you could say.
I had to call in Archbishop Cloud because my dad just passed recently, and I'm still a bit shattered and having a hard time, you know, doing some of this other stuff. So I'll get back into it. I'll be able to get back in and do it all here in not too distant future, but it's been a tough experience. So I just called him in and said, hey, let's clear this house and get it wiped out. I'm hoping to go to Two Guns, Arizona here in the next, hopefully couple of months anyway, before it starts getting too darn hot out there. That's going to be an interesting investigation. It was a tourist trap there for a long time, and some of the buildings are still standing. But the main part of it is the Apache Death Cave. The story goes that there were some Apache that came up into Navajo land. They wiped out a town, supposedly killed everybody there, ripped off everything that was there, and then they disappeared. A little while later, they hit a second town, a little village, wiped it out as well. So, of course, the Navajo are wondering where in the world these people are going. So one of them was walking along or riding his horse along and felt warm air coming up from a crack in the ground. Then got down and started listening and heard voices. So he went back, got all the rest of them, and they found a cave, a great big cave under there, and they started piling up brush in front of it, getting a bunch of brush in there, caught it on fire, got it going, and kept adding wet stuff to it. And 44 Apaches braves were died of smoke inhalation in there. So now the place is cursed, of course. The place is haunted, of course. And wasn't very good for business. They've tried three or four times to get businesses in there, you know, those tourist trap places and campgrounds and all that. But I'm really interested in getting out there and seeing what we can find at that location. It's right along the I-40, so it's, you know, you can't miss it. But I'm really interested in getting out there and going through the cave and seeing what we can pick up.
Caves are really fun anyway. We found a campgrounds in Kentucky that we're going to be covering the story on next year. That it has a cave. Daniel Boone supposedly stayed in the cave to avoid a few things. And a small Indian colony actually passed away in the edge of the cave because they froze to death, believe it or not. It has an amazing history. The whole park has an amazing history, though. But when we first walked through it, I was like, man, I got to come back here with all my equipment.
Yeah. Definitely.
It's a fun thing to do. It's creepy in itself going into a cave anyway. But then you find a lot of interesting things when you're in there. And it's just an amazing experience. I definitely... And I wish I was closer. I'd tag along on that one.
Yeah, it's a 6.5-hour drive for me, but I think it's going to be well worth it. Get out there, camp for the night, and investigate and see what we can find. I took my son through Carlsbad Caverns, which, of course, just about a year ago. Of course, it's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have gone through it. But I took him through there, and he was pretty well creeped out by being in the underground like that. So he doesn't want to go on this investigation with us at all because he doesn't want to be in the cave. chicken.
Well, some people get terrified of that. I was actually over break and I was sharing some of my book with my relatives and friends. And it's amazing even now. I mean, they've all known that I've been into this for God almost 20 years now. And I still get some of the wives and some of the other people go, no, not me. I'll watch it on TV. That just scares the crap out of me.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. let's see.
It's kind of funny if you think about it because, and you've been doing this probably longer than me, actually, out on site. And it's amazing because everybody thinks it's a scary thing. It's a terrible thing. You're going to be terrified. Well, you do get a thrill from doing it at first when you first go out, but I really haven't been scared that often.
Startled, yes. Not scared. I don't think I've been scared in years. Startled, yes. You know, you're sitting there doing something and something throws a rock at you or touches you or shoves you or whatever. And you kind of wind up with, you know, a startle. You jump a bit. But no, I'll run toward whatever the noise is or whatever's running out there. So that's the way it should be.
That's what I do too. I've had some, you know, it's amazing. You can always tell. Well, you know this. You can always tell a young investigator that just started from a seasoned investigator because I've seen people run out of places just terrified. And what am I doing? I'm just calmly walking directly into whatever they ran from.
Of course, where all the fun is anyway, right?
Yeah, that's what you don't get paid the big bucks for, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. We don't get paid at all. Thanks.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's fine. Just like many, many, many groups out there, my group never charges for anything because it's just, I don't know, we're there to help them. I don't see the reason in doing that. It just doesn't make sense. We did an exorcism with Archbishop Cloud up in the Bay Area. Zach from my team and I went up there and we helped out with the exorcism and everything. And afterwards, we all went out to lunch. And I asked the investigator that did all the putting this thing together for us. I asked him, okay, we need a haunted hotel and a place to investigate tonight. And the guy looked at me like I was nuts and said, what, you just finished with an exorcism. What in the world are you wanting to investigate for? We're in a different spot. We're in a different area, you know, 5.5 hours up the road. Come on, tell us. So he told us to stay at the Burlington Hotel in Port Costa, which is right along the Sacramento River. Beautiful little town, tiny little town, but really nice. And then he said, go up and investigate the walk around in the Santa Rosa Rural Cemetery in Santa Rosa, California. So I called up the hotel, reserved a room for Zach and I, and said, throw a rollaway in there. And then we got up to, we drove up there to Santa Rosa Rural Cemetery. And the walk-in gate was open, but of course the vehicle gate was closed. And we walked in, and as soon as we started in through the gate, we got this pushback, like, we don't want you here, go away, it's, you know, you don't belong here. Of course, we pulled out our flashlights and walked right on in and started talking about it, because it's a beautiful cemetery. It's absolutely gorgeous. And we're walking through there, and this is, what, 9:30 at night, almost 10 o'clock. We're walking through and started talking about how beautiful the stones were and how big they were and the trees and the plants and, you know, just talking about everything. You start feeling that go away thing just diminishing and going away itself. So we walked along about 20 minutes around this corner. We hear this rustling in a bush. So of course, flashlights go out. We're sitting here watching those, watching the bush. And I see this kid, 16, 17, 18 year old with a red and white Letterman jacket on, walking in an oblique angle up the hill. And I'm sitting here with my flashlight on him, and Zach's got his flashlight on him, and we're watching going along. I said, hey, kid, are you okay? Need anything? And he just ignored me. He kept walking up the hill. And Zach says, who are you talking to? I said, that kid going up the hill over there. And he says, I don't see anybody. All I hear is a noise. So that was kind of really neat. And I looked up in the area. There's 6 high schools, and one of them have red and white Letterman jacket. So I thought that was kind of interesting. So I'm trying to get with them and see if I could find out who it might have been, just for curiosity's sake. But that was an interesting experience. When we got back to Port Costa to the hotel, we went across to the bar, and I saw this very large, muscular woman in there, like she was running the warehouse that this bar used to be. And nobody else could see her. I could see her standing over there, and she looked like she was just working the place and having a great old time. She was laughing and hollering and everything. I thought that was really interesting. And I asked the bartender if the place was haunted, and she says, don't talk about spirits here. Don't talk about ghosts here, anywhere in town. Apparently, they'd had a lot of people going in and ghost hunting in town, really not knowing what they're doing, and getting everything just riled up. Every spirit in town was irritated and everything. And these people have to live with that. So it's like, you know, come on, folks, don't go out there ghost hunting just for the heck of it, especially in a town where a lot of people live. But we were in the hotel. After that, we went back to the hotel, and Zach happened to see a lady standing on the staircase. And I turned around and I looked, and I could see the outline of a lady, very, very dim in there. And she just looked at us and smiled and walked on up the stairs. So I thought that was really kind of a fun adventure we had on that thing. So an exorcism, investigation, and a haunted hotel all in one day. Fantastic stuff.
That is pretty cool. I have yet to have that many experiences, to be honest with you. I've had a handful of different ones at one location, but I did have a unique one. I had a case where we ended up with a little girl, and then 3 houses down, just by sheer accident, we ran into a older man. We were doing interviews to follow up when we were at the house, because we wanted to get a history.
Right.
And ran across another ghost in another house while we were doing an interview that was totally nothing to do with it.
Wow.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. Ended up being a residential thing, obviously, but still kind of neat. It's always kind of cool when you end up with a situation where you have multiple experiences in an area. We tried to do that with Bryan, Ohio, but Bryan, Ohio is such a vast place. It's got like five or six different buildings that you investigate. And because he opens up the whole town, it's hard to do all of those.
All right.
Especially in 8 hours. So we're going to try to go back there and isolate each building, do one building and then go another building and just run through them all one at a time within an 8 hour process.
Wow. That's going to be a busy time.
Yeah.
It's bad enough with just one or two buildings.
Haunted towns are tough, man. There's two or three of them coming out now. It's a great concept for tours, but investigators don't get enough time unless you come back multiple times. You got to pretty much spend. I can see where Shepherdstown was a challenge for a few years because you can dive into a town and spend 5 years just doing the town.
Exactly.
That's an amazing thing. So while you're out there, obviously there's been some controversial things come up here in the past year when it comes to the paranormal, and one of those is equipment applications. Gosh, I don't know about you, but I've seen so many wars out there right now on what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is I rely on me, my own body, and I rely on my dowsing rods. Those are my two go-to everything. I've got video cameras. I got still cameras. I've got the stuff that people expect you to have when you show up at their house or at their business to take a look at the paranormal, you know, the K2 meters and all that other stuff, the Mel meter and all that. Uh-huh. Turn them on, get them going, get my REM pod going. And sometimes they'll help you out a little bit, but still, I've got an empath and a medium on my team. I've got a clairaudient. I've got me, and I couldn't do any of this stuff. I usually don't even see them, really, unless I guess they really want to be seen. But I had a heart transplant a couple years ago, and I died a number of times right before the transplant and actually during it when they hooked me up to the heart-lung bypass. So all of those things going on, I kind of have more sensitivity now. I'm not saying I'm a medium or anything like that, but I have more sensitivity. I can feel energy around me or where the energy is standing and things more. So that really helps a lot. So I use myself, my body as kind of a guide as to where something is. And I use my dowsing rods for yes, no, and directional information. We're going to try this out here soon. I was up with John Davison up in Barstow. We went to the old town of Hinckley. Remember the problems with PG&E and Aaron Brockovich and all that stuff? Uh-huh. The town of Hinckley is right outside of Barstow. So John Davison asked me to go up, and we had dinner, and then we went out to the Dixie Inn. Walked around out there for a little bit. It's just right there on the main drag, old Highway 58, basically going out there. And it's a little tiny bar. Really little tiny bar. You could probably fit, 10 people in it with tables. That's about it. And across the parking lot area was an old gas station and market, meat market and little store, a garage where you can get your vehicles fixed, and then a few hotel rooms back there. So we're walking around, and I went Facebook Live on that one. And I had a lot of people pipe in telling me that there was somebody in the chair in one of the hotel rooms, which are all completely falling apart. I mean, weather gets in like crazy through the holes in the roof, and there's no windows or doors or anything anymore. But we're walking around out there, and people are saying, yep, there's somebody sitting in that chair. And then there's somebody behind the meat counter over there, and they're watching you, things like this. And the one of the empaths on my team piped in and said, well, there's somebody named Charles who wants you to know where his body is. Huh. So I said, okay. And JD and I kind of looked at each other, and okay, that's great. We continued on with what we were doing. And a little while later, we finished looking at the town. Looking at the Dixie Inn anyway, and all of that. And I said goodnight to the audience, and JD and I kind of looked at each other and said, let's go find a body. So I got out my dowsing rods and asked if Charles was still there. And he said, yes, he crossed yes. Said, do you want us to find your body? He said, yes. I said, well, point to it. And we followed the dowsing rods around, and he walked us around a pile of old sticks and stuff that would trip us up, and walked down through some trees and across the across a little road there, all on the same side of the highway. And we're walking along, and all of a sudden the rods just cross. I said, okay. So I come at it from six different directions, and they crossed at the same exact spot. So I said, is this where your body is? And he goes, yes. He said he died in the 1930s. I said, all right. So I put a mark there, one of those little flags with a wire there, and I'm going to get some more people together, one of them being a cop. And we're going to go up there and maybe here in the next weekend or next weekend or two, go up there and see if we can find out if he's really buried there or not. That would put a little some more verification behind what dowsing rods can do.
Yeah, you know, I've always been fascinated with dowsing rods just because of the uniqueness of them. A lot of people they're really cautious on them, I guess you could say. But my grandfather used dowsing rods throughout his property. He had 40 acres at one point. Now, he sold it all off, obviously, before he passed away. But every well he ever found and dug were from dowsing rods. He didn't pay any high numbers for people to locate the water and so forth. He just went walking around until those things went off and said, okay, we're going to dig here, and brought the equipment out and dug.
Right. Yeah, it happens. It's basically energy. You're looking for energy. If you concentrate on water, you'll find water wherever it happens to be. I happen to think of spirit energy. You know, that's what I'm trying to find. So, you know, I don't know. I'm experimenting with them all the time. Sometimes, you know, like, for instance, one time at my dad's house years ago, I guess it was 15 years ago or so. We're sitting here walking along, and Dad said he couldn't find this pistol. He said he set it down someplace and he couldn't find it anywhere. So I go walking around the house with my dowsing rods, and he lead me back to the laundry room right by the garage door. And they're saying, this is where they are. This is where they are. And I'm looking all over the place and can't find them. Then I happen to look up, and there's a cabinet up there. Open up the cabinet door, reach inside, and there it is, sitting right there. Went and took it to my dad. He's like, oh my God, where'd you find that thing at? So I told him, and I said, I use my dowsing rods. He goes, I don't believe in that stuff. So, okay, cool, but I found your weapon for you, right?
That's neat. You know, I do a little bit of that, or did, rather, the strangest thing, because you can actually tune yourself into energy, which I think a lot of people in the ghost field, they're like, eh. But if you ever notice, when you're in a highly active area, a lot of people use the term, your hair stands up. I have really hairy arms. This is a silly thing, listeners, but I have really hairy arms. And one of the things I've learned is almost like goosebumps, is if I'm in a really active area, I can take my arm and pull it out, and then I can move right into the area of wherever this is, and every hair will stand straight up.
Exactly right. Exactly right. You know, as you were talking about apps and other things like that, I'm sitting here looking at my phone, and I know it has a microphone, as a speaker. It has an accelerometer built into it, so, you know, you can spin it, and it moves things around, so it senses that. I don't know if it has an EMF detector. Don't think it does, but somebody told me, yes, it does. And I'm thinking, my iPhone has an EMF detector? Why? So I can't imagine that being there. But you know, some of these apps that go out, if they use the microphone and the speaker or the accelerometer for like a geophone type thing, mm-hmm. You know, you can put it on there, and if something walks across, it'll make, you know, lights flash up or whatever. I could buy that. It's not a problem. You know, go ahead and use it if you want to, just like we use K2s and the rest. But things like that are going to point out where a ghost is, I'm a little bit leery about that.
Well, I mean, some of the programs, and I've looked into them because we actually have a tech site, me and my partner coming up, that's ghostsite.com, that will be launched in January. I wanted to do it in December, but we wanted to make sure we had the product right. So I thought, let's look into these apps a little bit. Let's find out what works and what doesn't. And some of the programming, you know, for simple things, you know, like testing differences in sound frequencies, You could probably do an EMF detector on it, but I wouldn't trust it because it's app programmed rather than using the actual physical sensors.
But what sensor are you going to use?
Yeah.
How are you going to pick up that EMF with your phone? Now, I don't know if it really has one or not, so I'm just saying I don't see why it would. So, you know, but that would be an interesting thing to test out and see what they see what's found out that way.
One of the things that we did find, and I'm going to test it before I actually sell it. One of them we are going to sell, so the listeners know, that's actually unique is a lot of people use the temperature thermometers when they're out there, right?
Right.
There is one you can attach to your phone. Upload the app, attach the actual thermometer to your phone that has a cord and a small portable, and you don't have to worry about that big bulky thermometer that you carry around to test the temperatures around you. And it's just as accurate.
That's a good one.
And there is one that an app that a creator is sending me that I spoke to last week, and I'm going to test it to find out that's similar to that. He says, okay, rather than use your phone as the EMF detector, you can use the power on your phone, and I have a small form of an EMF detector rather than the bulky detector that plugs into a device that's just designed to pick up what it reads. It'll tell you what it, you know, it'll go off and say, okay, the device is reading this much. But he has a really long cord for it. That would be the only flaw I would see. You're going to have to sit your phone down and walk around with this long cord. Otherwise you might pick up your phone.
Yeah, I could see that. But again, that's an attachment. You're adding a sensor, which is great. I think that's a wonderful thing. Just like I got my old iPhone 5S it's actually in the center console of my truck right now, but I've got one of those FLIR 1 modules that just sort of plugs in on there. I love that gadget. And it's an actual thermal imaging camera. It was real cheap. I think it was $250 compared to one of the big thermal imaging cams.
The $500 to $1,000. Yeah, I had one of those for a long time. Mine broke, and I never went out and got another one. But they are fun.
I love it. You know, you can take movies, you can take pictures, you can do whatever you want to with it, and I really love it. I use that a lot. But that's actually a sensor. You know, it's got the heat sensors on it, and it's really a great thing.
We've actually adapted that technology now that it came out, now that the patent's been released on it, we adapted that technology for that adapter into a smaller handheld FLIR device that you can just attach onto a camera thing, almost like a little bit larger than an action camera that we've got coming out. That's half the cost of a regular FLIR. It's under half the cost of regular FLIR. It's about competitive with that, right around $200, $250. And I'm trying to lower that cost, and you've got a screen that's halfway decent on it. It's, gosh, about the size of your cell phone screen.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Yeah. My inventor that works with GhostSight, he's kind of I'm the marketer, and Joel is kind of the guru behind it. You'd be amazed, man. He gets into his little cave, and he pulls out crap every weekend and goes, hey, check this out. I'm upgrading this. I'm doing that. We're going to sell this. I'm like, cool. Just get it done. That is killer.
Sounds good. It sounds excellent.
Yeah, it's been a fun process. The beauty of, you know how when you put together TV shows and you go out and you try to advertise it and so forth, you know how you can get caught up. You've seen it for years, how you can get caught up in all this dramatic nature and people will slam you and tear you apart and so forth to the point to where you just don't want to do it anymore.
Ignore the haters.
Well, yeah, and that's what you got to do. I was used to that in radio. I mean, everybody that listens to my show, you know this. I'm a very stern person on this is the reality, this is not. And you get a bunch of haters on your own there. When we went out into the media world, it became a little bit more graphic. I mean, some of these people, they go to extremes on social media, and then they take it off of social media, and they'll start calling your phone and doing crazy stuff, but that's a whole other story. So rather than deal with all of that, and I'm still producing my documentaries, I just dropped out of the limelight, went back into the radio and said, okay, we're going to do these documentaries for people. I'm still going to film for everybody, and I've been doing that for dozens of people. Next year, I'm going to be doing it again, and they use the footage, give me credit at the end of their videos. Hey, that's fine. You're paying me to be there. I don't care.
But we
decided to go backwards a little bit, and rather than be in the limelight, because let's face it, you and I both know the reality. You can put these shows together all you want, and if you're not doing it out of passion, and I love my passion, so I really don't care if people watch what I do. You're doing it for wanting a TV show. Now, what's the reality of actually getting on TV? Slim to none.
Unless you got a really good idea like I've got, and I'll talk to you about it later.
Yeah, there are ideas that work really well, and TV is looking for those ideas. So absolutely, I'd love to talk to you about it. I've gotten into the promotion in quite a lot, so I might even be able to direct you to the right people to connect. That's a part of what I've been doing. We just kind of went backwards into the behind the area. I realized it's easier for me being a businessman rather than being in the limelight to create all the avenues that everybody needs. Investigators need a good portal to get their videos in, good contacts to promote. They need good equipment. They need new designs. They need all kinds of awesome stuff. Well, I can provide all of that stuff.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And it's worked out great. I'm having a blast.
Yeah, I've set up a YouTube channel for my group, and we've done, well, I don't know, 5 or 6 videos now. And it's been interesting because I've done the editing myself, trying to get it done. I haven't put together a really good intro yet. So I'm working on it. I'm learning as I go. So each one gets a little bit better and a little bit better as it goes. So, but we've hit some interesting spots. We talked about the Yuma Territorial Prison. We went to talked about the tunnels under Riverside, California, that are supposed to be there, that lead from the Mission Inn to the 14th Street Cemetery, Evergreen Cemetery, and then over to Mount Rubidoux. Each are like 1.3 miles away from the Mission Inn. So it's kind of interesting, some of these things that we did. I went up to Horse Thief Springs Cabin up by just south of Vegas, over by SEMA, California. And it's a great spot. Love that place. Did some filming up there. It's some investigating. And been to a couple of other places here and there. And quite interesting. So I'm always looking for new places. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I want to go out to Two Guns, Arizona, is to do a video for the YouTube channel. But I want to do an investigation as well. So we'll see what we can do out there.
Yeah, and that's something that a lot of people, I think, don't understand, which is why people get trashed a lot. When you first start your YouTube channel and when you first go out there videoing, I had the privilege of having some video experience because I started a long time ago in weddings and learning how to get the right angles and so forth. But when you're just doing it and you're working on the editing, I got to tell you, it's a learning curve.
It is.
I ran into, I just now, it's taken me a year to realize just now what professional software to use to make sure that I go from, on average YouTube quality video to, this could actually show on TV.
Right. Well, I've got some editing experience. I worked at a TV station when I was just after high school, and TV radio, and I was a radio DJ, but on the weekends, I had to put together commercials and things like that, edit them all together. So I do have some experience, but of course that was 1980s technology. And now I've got everything sitting here on my my computer right here in my office. And it's like, okay. So learning all the ins and outs of the software and everything like that. Yeah, you're right. That's a pretty good sized learning curve.
I did the same thing when we first started, and I was doing weddings and we were filming some of the football games, and I got the privilege of working behind the news stations a few times. We had big bulky cameras. When you were going portable, you had this large, uncomfortable battery belt.
Yeah.
Yep. Your cameras were still SVHS when I started, Super VHS. Most people don't even know what that is anymore. So I had to learn the cameras. I had to learn the software because, well, you know how an old editing room was. It's a lot different than having it all on your computer. So it's a real learning curve. It'll take you 6 months to a year just to figure out you can do certain things. And then all of a sudden you go, hey, I didn't know I could do that.
Oh, that's easy. Look at that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a fun process, though.
It is. I'll get it eventually. And I'm just having a hard time. I want to do them every week. I'm having a really hard time doing it with all the stuff going on in my schedule. And oh my goodness, it's just really busy.
It's tough to, I handed all of mine off to a production company. One of the things that we worked about, I think I told you about that once upon a time, we've been working on is access for investigators to have cheap costs for production companies. That's all they do is video edit. You just send it all over to them. They work with you. They send you back things and go, hey, will this work? Well, change this. Okay, great. Change that. Okay, great. Which is what we're doing now because I just didn't have enough time. We have 11,000 hours worth of video.
Yep.
And it took me almost 4 months just to go through that.
Yeah, I don't have nearly that much. I've only got about 1,000 or 2,000 hours, but still. Oh, when do you have 2,000 hours to sit there and go through video?
Yeah, it takes a long time, especially when you're working and doing a daily job and then you got your family and everything else going on. It's not easy.
No, it's not. I'm a single dad with a teenage son, work a full-time job. Then I'm trying to write as much as I can, and then I'm trying to investigate as much as I can, and still find time to be with my kid. It's tough. It really is.
Especially when you add on the writing, which I can definitely attest for. I've got 3 books that I'm working in, which is all haunted history from then till now, covering everything you can possibly think about that a researcher needs to look into in the first place in the paranormal. And writing alone takes a lot of time if you want to get it done right.
Right, yeah. And most of my stuff is right now. Most of my stuff is fiction. You know, I'll take things that we've done in our investigations or that I've experienced or things like that, and I'll work it into the book. So it's not just complete, total, you know, right out of my head. But I really enjoy that, coming up with the stories and basing it all in the paranormal stuff. My friend Dirk Dykstra has told me that I really need to try to write nonfiction paranormal stuff. And I'm looking at it going, I'll give it a shot. So, but I've got 3 books right now that I'm working on. One of them is an almost complete departure from my normal ghosts and things like that. Though, just to keep it in line with what I do, I've added ghosts to it, just so that they're there. And then the 2 others are paranormal and completely different universes, all of them. They're all sort of modern time in the last 20 years, but still, they're all fiction, and they're basically ghost stories and things like that. So I'm really looking forward to finishing up at least one of them. I'd love to get the next one out soon.
Well, I learned nonfiction can be rough in itself. I mean, everything that I'm writing right now is nonfiction. I love fiction because when my brain starts to go, it's like you can just keep typing and typing and typing. And I got so used to doing that for ghostwriting that my characters kind of – I'm weird when I write. When I do a fictional base, my characters kind of write themselves. I just kind of get into – the whole story and let it flow.
Oh, exactly. I know exactly what you're saying. For me, in the 3 of them, I've got these bubbles in my head, and I said, okay, I'm going to go talk to Richard for a little while, the one in the departure book. I'll step into that bubble, and I'll see what Richard is doing, and I'll just start writing. Yeah. I'll just follow him around town and things like that. It's relatively dark. So, and then I step back out, and I'll step into one of the other ones and write them for a little while. But because they're completely different universes and things like that, it's kind of fun to write because I don't get them confused. I don't get them stuck because they're in their own little bubbles. But exactly, you sit back and you watch the character, see what they're doing, and they write themselves.
Yeah, and the character kind of develops itself and just flows out on the paper. And then when you're done with that one, you just move on to the next one.
Exactly.
With nonfiction, it's a little bit rougher. I had to spend a lot of time researching and getting into the heads of people that have passed away, really digging into their research so that I could put together solid information so that when people start looking into, well, the foundation of the paranormal, things that we don't really hear a lot of the young investigators. I don't think a lot of the young investigators know about some of this stuff, to be honest with you.
Probably.
It just takes a long process because you're reading through all of this yourself and sometimes going, you know, I forgot all about that, or I didn't know that. And figuring out what to put in, what not to put in.
What's real, what's not real.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the hard part. That's why I'm a little bit reticent to get into the nonfiction. Unless I'm going through and doing things that I've actually witnessed myself and write about write about our actual investigations and things. Unless I'm actually doing that, boy, I don't know. Getting into things that other people have done would lead you to I think that would lead you into a spot where you could be like questioned about everything you've done. Well, they're going to question anyway if you've experienced it on your own. But you know, I've done this investigation, and people go, really? Like, we were up at the cabin up at Horse Thief Springs, and I was up with R.J. Murphy and his son Daniel, and I think Steve and R.J.'s daughter Kate. We were all up there investigating, and Daniel and I have been trying to find the source of the spring farther up the hill. But every time we start going up there and looking, we have to come back and help set up gear and all that. Well, this time I'd been up there for 5.5 hours before they even got up there. So all my gear was set up. So, and it was all set up and running all day long and ready to go. But we, I got up to this area where we couldn't go any farther up the canyon. And so we turned around and Danny said, okay, let's go back and try a little higher. I said, okay, that's fine. Higher up the hill, we'll be able to get around these bushes. As I turn around, I feel something hit my shoulders. Didn't know what it was, but I slipped and fell and banged my chin on a rock or a piece of log or whatever it was. Of course, my chin is bleeding now. We go through our investigation and everything is fine. Had a great investigation that night. We kept getting an Englishman talking on Echovox most of the night. And we knew that there was an Englishman that lived in the cabin for a while. So that was kind of cool. His accent was coming through just fine. But I get home the next day and I'm doing laundry and stuff for the week. And I have my shirt off. And my son says, what are those two marks on your back? And I said, what are you talking about? And I went in there and looked on my back. And there's two huge bruises on my shoulder blades. Thought that was interesting. So went about my business. The next day I get into work and one of the empaths that's on my team said, you ran into an Indian brave, didn't you? I said, I guess. I don't know. She said, yeah, you walked up to him. You walked up on him. And when you turned, he shoved you and, you know, you fell down and he ran away. So I thought that was really interesting. But why would I have two hits or two bruises on my shoulder blades for any other reason? You know, I just thought that was interesting, kind of a fun little thing. But if I write about that and I put that in my story, it's interesting, but will it really be nonfiction? Will people believe it?
Well, when you're dealing with autobiographies and I mean, I had to toe a real unique line putting my stuff together because, I mean, there are some very interesting research projects throughout the years. But if you go into the research projects themselves, you know, you are going to get a lot of people that are going to go, yeah, come on, these guys are this and these guys are that.
Exactly.
So I had to kind of take a step back and just say, okay, so here's the group. Here's the people. Here's what they found out. Here's the research. Here's the group. Here's the people. Here's what they found out. Here's the research. And just kind of put it there for people to read.
Right. And make up their own minds.
Yeah, and let them make up their own minds. It's more like a history book, almost as if you were purchasing these books for teaching somebody.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I mean, it was an interesting experience. I think the paranormal needs it. I think that people need kind of those study books so that they can go in and then dig in deeper themselves. But I kind of missed just writing fiction, I guess you could say, because fiction, like I said, you just kind of, it just flows. You're having fun with it.
See, I'm not out to impress anyone. Really, I'm not. I'm out to experience things, and I'm more than happy to share my experiences with people. But as for impressing someone, I'm really not into that. I would prefer to go out, experience things, and say, hey, this is what we found. What do you think? You know, that kind of stuff. And to me, I'm in it because of the passion. I love this stuff. I love helping people on their private residence investigations. I love trying to help clear that up, crossing spirits over, doing whatever we need to do, whatever we can to help these people. And then I like writing about it. But for me, like you said, the fiction to me is so much more interesting. I could take everything that happened at so-and-so's house and throw it into fiction, put it in a different state, twist the names around to protect those that were innocent, et cetera, and there you go. You know, I can write a story about some of this stuff and call it fiction, even though I was there and watched it happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's just love that stuff. But once again, who am I out to impress? You know?
Well, you know, that's the key with the paranormal is you should be in it for the passion. And, you know, even with TV shows, that's really what they look for. They look for the passion. You get to a point with them if you do take off. And there are, when I say this, everybody, and I know we're coming to the last 10 or 11 minutes or so, but when I say this, everybody, don't think that I'm downtrading anybody, because I have some very good friends that are television personalities right now that go all over the place, met them many, many times. You know, you get to a certain point to where you're just doing that in and out. So you're looking for specific things and you can't cover everything. But even then, every one of those people went in it for the passion. That's why they got picked up in the first place. They love what they do.
Right.
And that's really what it's all about. And, you're in it for the experiences. I'm in it for the scientific deductions. And the reality there, my passion is to be able to figure out what a ghost is. We still haven't figured that out. We assume it's a dead person.
Well, yeah, that's the assumption.
Yeah.
But you're exactly right. Is it really? You know, is it, are my playing tricks on us? Is it, you go out just like pareidolia and things like that. You're seeing faces, you're seeing shapes, familiar shapes in a pattern on the wall. Is that what we're seeing? But then again, just like that spirit on the staircase at the hotel in Port Costa, Zach and I both saw that spirit. She sat there, looked at us, smiled, and walked up the stairs. So, again,
and how can you explain that?
Right. If that's pareidolia, how are we both seeing the same thing as she's walking up the stairs, based on the patterns on the wall or whatever?
Well, so, some of the voice phenomena is the same way. Joel and I were at Octagon Hall setting up cameras, believe it or not, to try to solve other people's claims that were just in there before us. And we got full conversations. I mean, he was going up there, and this is actually going to be on a video we put together. He was going up there, and he asked, hey, is there anybody up there? We got a response. We both were shocked. I said, you know, okay, did you hear that? Went upstairs and said, hey, is there anybody downstairs, or are we still alone? Got a response. I said, hello. Got another response from the wife. We literally carried on about a 10-minute conversation with something that was nowhere to be found.
Exactly. Exactly. We were doing an investigation at the Corona Public Library, the last one that we did, early December, I think. And it was mid-November we did it. And we were in there, and Daryl Godsey from Murphy Paranormal had some of his stuff, ITC Legion's, some of their equipment, software. And he was in there with that. They were in the bookshop in the library. And the bookshop is very, very pitch black when the lights are off. And it's just so dark. You just run into things, and you got to be real careful. He was in there running his ITC stuff. And you could hear him saying, hey, you going to answer us? You going to answer us up here? Like that. And backwards, you hear this, you know how somebody's talking backwards on tape? He went through there and played it backwards so we could hear it. And it's the little boy from out in the children's section, Steven. And he's saying, "Can you turn on the lights? I'm afraid of the dark." Just clear as day. And it's very pertinent because usually he's out in the kids section and they have huge windows there. And at least the street lights and traffic and stuff like that provide him with a little bit of light. But he was, we didn't have that section on the tour that night for investigations. We had the other areas that were going on. So it was kind of interesting. He walked over, I guess, to the Stephen walked over to the bookstore to see what was going on. And he was sitting there talking to Daryl. He's talked to Daryl before. We had another guy with us that was helping. And he was back in that library section. And he thought he saw his son walking toward him. His son had passed about 6 years before. And he thought he saw his son walking toward him. He said his son just looked at him, smiled, and went away. And that, to me, was just like, oh, my goodness. He needed closure. This guy needed some good closure. And I think he got it because he's much happier now.
It's strange how that happens. Well, listeners, you're listening to BBS Radio. BBS Radio had a fall here recently with the California fires. Before that, they were one of the largest digital radio stations here in the digital world. They are slowly coming back up to that status. So here within January, they will be one of the largest digital radio stations again. They are on iHeartRadio in several formats. Make sure that you look at the other hosts that are on BBS, a bunch of wonderful people there. We're speaking to Joe Thompson. A couple of little punts here. GhostSite.com will be online January 1st. They will be what I like to call the Walmart of the paranormal, starting off with about 100 to 150 products. If everything works right, we will be adding roughly about 100 to 200 products a month before this is over with, so that you have everything you could ever possibly imagine. And it's going to be not only price competitive, you'd be surprised what you find there. So make sure you look them up. Nikam just launched its new night vision night cameras. Now we have a 1080 bright camera for daylight service, and we have a night vision action camera from Nikam that is not only comparable to every major action camera on the market, it's about half of the cost. So make sure that you look us up on GhostSite as well as Nikam, NICAM. It's the next generation of action cameras out there, so I do encourage you to do so. Joe, before we leave here, why don't we talk about where everybody can find you?
Well, I'm on Facebook. You can look up Pacific Coast Paranormal Investigations on Facebook. We've got PacificCoastParanormal.com on the internet, though unfortunately that site's not up to date as much as the Facebook one is. Once again, it's a time thing. My author page is J.E. Thompson. -author.com. Let's see. That's really it right now. I've got two books out right now on Amazon. One is called The Blue Orb by J.E. Thompson, and the other is 13 Tales of the Paranormal by J.E. Thompson as well. They're both available on Amazon as it is. We've got three more coming out here, hopefully this year.
Awesome. Well, I'll make sure we post the links once they come up on my pages and websites and so forth. So listeners, make sure you take a look for all of that. Next week's show, we will be having a guest that is coming back to talk about his new book he just brought out, Alan Wright, wonderful person. And we have many, many other guests, including on January 11th, a crossover special here on BBS from another radio paranormal host, Dean Knight, who has his own information. I'll be telling you a little bit more about that as we go through Alan's show. You're listening to Paranormal Truth and Reality here on BBS Radio. And I'm going to end this on a twofold. First off, I always end it the same way. In the paranormal, as you're learning, truth should always be that reality. Joe has told you just a little bit about the reality and the personal aspects and how much that's important to every investigator out there and why it drives us. So keep that in mind when you're young, when you're new, when you're in your first 2 or 3 years. Not only do your research, but don't get frustrated when people come after you. You're still learning, and let's face it, a good percentage of it is the passion that brought you there in the first place, and that's what's going to keep you going. Outside of that, Happy New Year's, everybody, ahead of time. Enjoy it. Drive safe. Do not go on the roads for the wrong reasons. And we'll talk to you when January comes around. Have a good weekend.